When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial. And with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown. And through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at Marines.com.
I mean, what's more football focus doing? Last week they had Brady. This week they got Brady.
We're doing it. We're literally doing it differently from everybody else.
As a matter of fact, moving forward from this point on, I will not make reference to PFL.
Ready to get into it?
Yeah.
All right. We're going team by team. I would be very careful with my slinging stuff. Am I going to get sued?
Are we going legal on this?
I like football. I like football season. All the things that go with it.
Welcome into the PFF NFL podcast. Steve Pelizzola, Sam Monson. We're live here on a beautiful Monday morning, Sam, live on YouTube. And we appreciate everybody for tuning in or listening wherever you listen to your podcast. Yeah, here we are.
Morning.
Yeah, another week, And it's big football week.
Yeah.
Every NFL team is going to play this week.
Every NFL team?
Preseason week one.
We already had a game.
Not week zero. It's like week one.
Yeah.
Which we call two, I think. We have Hall of Fame week, and then there's this one.
No, I think this is, one.
Okay, good. Right. Week one. Happy preseason week one, everybody.
Yeah, we've already had a football game, sort of.
We have had a football game. We'll talk a little Hall of Fame game, whatever you can take away from the Hall of Fame game.
There's some things.
There are some things.
Not much, but
we're going to break down all of the big name NFL signings from this weekend and what they all mean.
Cool.
And I'll play a little GM.
Yeah.
At some point as well.
Mm-hmm.
Sound good?
Sounds good.
What else you want to talk about today? And then the other thing is we're just hanging out and we'll probably just ramble about all sorts of other stuff that comes up along the way that didn't make it into the title, which is why you have to pretty much just tune in and see what we're going to ramble about.
We do have a tendency to do that. Meme guy came back with a dropped a little video.
Welcome back, Meme guy. I don't know if he like went to Europe for the summer or something, but he disappeared for a few months, but he's back.
I don't like to pry.
Yeah, I didn't want to pry. Yeah. But maybe he goes on vacation like the entire NFL.
Maybe.
And he's come back and he was making fun of us for the 10-minute diversion that we had the other day in the middle of like one sentence point that we were trying to make.
Well, yeah, the clip that he posted pretty much, I think, sums up this podcast, which was like us trying to retrace our steps and figure out how the hell we even started talking about whatever diversion we were on.
Yeah.
That pretty much, that's how this works.
The unfortunate thing is somewhere in all of those ramblings that we have.
Yeah.
I think we do make some good points here or there. I can never remember them.
Certainly not intentionally.
Or, you know, track them down. And
that's the thing. It's like, when did it happen?
Yeah.
Why did it happen? You can't even like, because, you know, maybe we should go back and clip that video. The really smart thing we said. But it was like a tangent in the middle of something else. There's no way you'll ever track it down because it's not like, you know, we would need to like, the timestamps, you know, on YouTube or the audio.
Yeah, our poor social team, they can't keep up with that.
That's the thing. You would need to like subcategorize them, right? It's in the middle of like Browns versus Eagles, but 5 minutes in, we're talking about like fishing.
Yeah. Sam had a great point about Ireland rugby while talking about Zach Wilson's Hall of Fame debut or whatever it might have been.
Mm-hmm.
But one thing I do know is the PFF NFL podcast is sponsored by Western and Southern Financial Group. While you focus on your roster moves, Western and Southern helps advance your money moves. Buying your first home, planning to start a family, wondering how to make your money grow? Well, Western and Southern's playbook of life insurance, investment, and retirement solutions helps you rest assured on game day. Team up to understand needs and address goals with a game plan built just for you. Get started at westernsouthern.com/PFF. All right, do you want to talk? Let's talk Hall of Fame game really quick, then we'll get into the signings.
Okay.
It was Thursday night. I think the Browns won. but it's one of those games where like the vibe was the Jets, right? The Jets are looking pretty good because they were winning.
They were up early.
Earlier in the game.
Zach Wilson with a bomb.
Yeah.
The end.
That was like my one takeaway from the game. You just stole it.
Oh, okay. Sorry.
No, I had another one. It felt like the Jets won because they, you know, were winning early, but the Browns had more points at the end of the day. So technically they won the game.
Yes.
That's how preseason works.
I mean, it's how any game works.
Can we discuss, can we make a big deal about the Ravens and their streak?
About the Ravens? Oh, the preseason.
This year,
streak.
This preseason, let's be like what overly dramatic. How do they do that?
I don't know. What are they up to now?
It's like 20 or something, isn't it? Somebody drop in the chat. What's the Ravens preseason winning streak? They haven't lost since the Flacco administration. Yeah. Incredible. Incredible work by the Ravens. So, yeah, we are recapping the Jets and the Browns.
Yeah.
What are your Hall of Fame game takeaways?
So,
and Mike Tirico, midseason form. They were just
straight in there.
Three plays in, they weren't watching football.
That's the best thing. We were like 7 minutes into the game. We're like midway through the first quarter, and they're not even play-by-playing anymore. They're just talking to Rondé Barber on the sideline. Like, six plays have happened, and we haven't even mentioned what's going on in the field.
I do appreciate – NBC did a great job, though, of making sure that we saw the plays.
Yes.
Like back in the day, sometimes they'd be like, no, we're talking to Rondé, and it's like
– we're not even going to reference them, but you'll at least see it on the screen.
Or sometimes the local TV broadcasts, you know, they get the local crew and stuff. They're not as good at getting back to the action. You know, no, sorry, we're interviewing, you know, Cardinals legend Larry Centers here. Sorry, we missed six plays.
Do you think that everybody –
it's tough to grade those.
Do you think that late in the game everybody was like – sigh of relief when Fred's in the booth with Chris and Al, and it's like, oh God, we got 10 minutes where we don't have to listen to him screaming at us in the headset.
He's gone. He's retired. He's done. That's why he's in there, going to the Hall of Fame.
I don't think people understand.
But yeah, they're probably afraid.
Appreciate
Fred.
You know how good Fred Gaudelli is or was at that job. Like, that guy is insanely good at, you know, everything to do with creating, I think, the best football broadcast out there.
Like, Fred Gaudelli was the NBC producer. I think he was going to the Hall of Fame, right? That's why they were celebrating him?
Whatever it is. It's not...
Or he got honored by...
Right. It's some sort of Hall of Fame honorific as opposed to actually being inducted.
But Fred's great. I mean, I'm pretty sure he was the guy who started the first down line when he was at ESPN. He was in that mix there. He had produced the draft and he used to do Sunday Night Football for ESPN. And then he was Chris's producer for the majority, I think all those years, at NBC. And Chris was trying to explain that on the broadcast, just how much interaction there is during a game. And not that Chris, you know, Chris is great at his job and everything, but Fred's in his ear telling him what to say, you know? Just saying, Fred did a great job making sure that Chris and Al were like on point,
so
hitting the right notes, you know?
So one takeaway is that we didn't care about the game, and neither did they after about 3 minutes. Second takeaway is obviously – with any preseason game, the result itself meaningless. All you can do is look for individual performances, and even then you have to couch it with, well, who are they going against, you know, blah, blah, blah. So Mekhi Becton, his return, lasted 7 snaps. Now, they were good snaps, but there was only 7 of them before he got hurt again and had to come off the field.
So Becton, Jets left tackle, former first rounder, again, he as a rookie – he was the guy that ran at like 364 pounds, had one of those freak type of workouts, played better as a rookie probably than he did in college, and he's been hurt ever since.
Yeah.
And now during training camp, early in camp, he was missing practices right away, and they were celebrating the wins that were, hey, he practiced back-to-back days.
Right, but I think that was by design. Like, they were deliberately not going from 0 to 100 and throwing him right back in there, 100% participation every single day. Like, let's go. They were deliberately easing him back, you know, as a sort of part-time transition to get back to full health. And I think it was going well. And then, I think this was largely precautionary as opposed to he, you know, tore an ACL again. But point being, on a day where we're remembering Joe Thomas with 10,000, whatever, 363 consecutive snaps, Becton made it 7. You're like, meh.
Sad.
There's something to that idea of your best ability is availability. You know, if you can't make it past 7 snaps before getting hurt again and having to come out, it's not going to really work.
You're a big Frank Gore fan.
Well, by contrast, DeJuan Jones, the other like 400-pound monster tackle playing for the Browns, I still believe was a first-round talent and slipped in the draft because of all, you know, concerns about his attitude or his weight or whatever it is. That dude played 74 snaps.
Yeah, DeJuan Jones, fascinating prospect. He plays 74, so they're throwing him in the mix to just get some reps. Falls to pick 112 for the Browns, the fourth round. And remember, on draft night, I mean, I had, you know, my data was saying he's probably a fringe first round pick. Mm-hmm. A lot of other people had him as a potential first round pick. I had mocked him to the Bengals at the back end of the first round a ton. I loved that
fit. Right tackle.
Yeah, to answer the right tackle question, which is, you know, Jonah Williams and injured Lyle Collins and DeJuan Jones. And we get there on draft night, and Chris is in the seat. And I always love doing draft night with Chris because he does see the game. Like, you and I become a bit of an echo chamber at times. And even if we're not, even if we disagree, like, I at least know what your takes are. I've heard them for 2 months leading up to draft night. I'm like, all right, I know what he's going to say. Chris, you never know what he's going to say. He's like a loose cannon. You never know.
Mm.
So he was like, man, all the GMs I talked to were just down on DeJuan Jones.
Yeah.
And
Chris himself really liked him. Like, Chris thought not only is DeJuan Jones a first-round talent, but he could play left tackle. Like, we're not talking about that cliche of right tackle only. Like, he can move. He can play left tackle at the NFL level.
Which doesn't mean anything, but, you know.
No, but, like, there's still something to this idea, I think, that nobody – he was the only person I heard essentially project DeJuan Jones to the other side of the line and say, you know, we were talking about a guy that can play on the left side as well. Like, everybody else is just like, here's your right tackle.
Yeah. So Jones played in the Hall of Fame game a lot like he did at Ohio State and a lot like he did at the Senior Bowl before he left, which is part of the reason why people were upset. He just had one good day and bounced.
Right.
81 pass blocking grade. He's a monster who moves pretty well, to your point, and he's just really difficult to get around.
Well, that's the thing. He moves well enough that his size becomes a huge obstacle. Like, there are guys who are giant and they don't, like Daniel Faalele, right? Daniel Faalele is similar-ish size, kind of, to DeJuan Jones, but does not move well enough, so you can get around it, right? You can make him take a false step, and as soon as he takes a false step, he's so slow to re-anchor and reshift his feet, you can get all the way around him. DeJuan Jones moves well enough that you can't do that, so you're always going to have to go the long way around him. And when you're talking about a guy with the largest wingspan that's ever been measured, 370 pounds, and the size he is, it's a long way around him. And, you know, that was an example of that in the Hall of Fame game. There are plays where you kind of have the beating of him, but you never, and he's so strong that even with one arm, you know, full extension, he can make it really difficult for you to get clean around him. So
recovery length, I like to say, you know, like if you're not, that's the reason why scouts look at arm length and various things like that is because it's like, how do you win even when you're not at your best,
right?
Even when you're not in perfect position. And DeJuan Jones certainly has that because he could just, you know, stick an arm out and slow you down. Because all you have to do is slow him down 2.5 seconds, right? 2.5, 3 seconds. That's your goal. If your footwork's not perfect, you're not perfectly to your landmark, can you win some other way? And DeJuan Jones has that.
When I watched his college tape, that really stood out, was the number of plays he doesn't lose from a position that looks like he's screwed.
Yeah.
Like, the guy's on his way around. You've got all you have is an arm to stick out and try and stop this guy. And just the sheer size and strength he possesses with that arm, he stops them. Like, they're not able to get around, not able to get through that contact. It reminds me a little bit, didn't at the time, but now does since it subsequently happened. But it's like you with the stiff arm when we're playing rugby, right? There's so much arm there, it's difficult to get past that. And that's DeJuan Jones in a nutshell.
Look, I think my – listen, when I stiff-armed you on the way to the – what do you score in rugby?
Try.
To the try.
Yeah. Although you didn't because you spiked the ball.
It's one of those things like when you're in the moment, it felt like special and difficult, and I feel like I really achieved something. When you rewatch it and it's like two old men moving in slow motion.
Yeah, neither of us.
It looked like an old-timers game.
Right.
It's less effective. However, I do believe me stiff-arming you to the ground should be some sort of gif or, you know, recurring reminder here on the show. That's got to be embarrassing for you.
Yeah. No, I mean, you watch that tape and it's disgusting.
I also beat you for a 70-yard touchdown once,
which
also we could dig up and, you know, have as a recurring
bit. The part there that you always leave out is that you were also eviscerated when we just flipped sides. Only the difference being, like, you weren't in tight coverage that the ball got through. Like, the 1.5 graded pass from former NFL quarterback, current quarterback coach, Zach Robinson.
Yes.
Like, that part you leave out, right, was that there was a 45-yard pass or whatever on the button, plus 1.5 grade. The second part you leave out is that
stacked. I ran away from you.
We're in like lockstep coverage, and then you did some ridiculous thing with your arms where they're like out here for 7 minutes, making me like play the ball too early.
It's an underused technique to bait you into slowing down.
The third part that you leave out is that when we flip sides and I was a receiver and you were in coverage, you weren't there at all, and I scored the 50-yard bomb.
Are you celebrating getting open against a 6'10", 200?
I'm just pointing out that there's a difference in, magnitude of the open.
Of course I'm not going to be able to cover you.
Yeah.
But that was your job. You were a defensive back.
Right. I covered fine.
I ran past you.
I covered perfectly until the ball arrived.
All right.
And then there was, mistakes were made.
Get back to the Hall of Fame game.
Okay. So DeJuan Jones, we've done both centers. Each one of these teams, drafted one of those centers that did not go at the top of the draft. And you're like, why are these guys falling? Oh, they're still good.
Really quick on DeJuan Jones. There's no path to the field this year. Unless, because Jack Conklin's there. Unless Jack Conklin gets hurt again. I'm just saying, direct path. I mean, I'm assuming they're expecting him back, right?
Yeah, no, but I'm like...
But like early...
Has become a thing that happened.
No, the last couple of years, right. Yes, of course. I would think about DeJuan Jones actually moving to the left side, though. Jedrick Wills is in that, I think he's underachieved a little bit, could break out here this year. I would think about it. But DeJuan Jones looks like he might be the best backup tackle in the league coming into this year. All right,
after 74 snaps.
After 74 snaps.
Not that we're running,
and our draft hype.
So, two centers, Luke Whipler and Joe Tippmann, both played very well in that game. Both looked like they could be starting centers if the team wanted to do that. And then, of course, we have DTR.
Yes. Dorian Thompson-Robinson.
Mm-hmm. After, by the way, the misery that was their starting quarterback in the game.
He's also been UCLA quarterback since the Flacco administration,
yes.
DTR. Yeah. Chip Kelly has not coached at UCLA without DTR as his starting quarterback. Chip Kelly's heading into like year six here at UCLA, or is it seven? Dorian Thompson-Robinson did a great job with his legs.
Yeah.
Just made quick decisions, got the ball out.
Threw a block.
And threw the awesome block for on a touchdown run. Your thoughts?
So I'm in danger of having to confront a reality where DTR might not suck. And so
this isn't because you're rooting against the player or anything.
No.
It's just that you are.
I saw quite a lot of him
to your.
Well, he's a guy that got progressively better over his 17-year college career, right? And the majority of that career I saw early on.
Yeah.
And consequently wrote him off at that point, Like you see enough of a guy early and you're like, "Nah, this is not going to work. I'm out." So I was out and then he got better. And it's like, okay, but I'm still kind of out. Like, he's got a long way to go before we're at the NFL level. But I'm starting to feel a little bit about him the way I did with Jalen Hurts. Did not like Jalen Hurts coming out. And yes, he'd gotten better from being benched at Alabama to, his performance at Oklahoma. But he was still a long way away from where he needed to be in the NFL. And then he got on the NFL field. He was still a long way away, and he got better, and he keeps getting better, and he just keeps getting better and better and better, and at some point that becomes really good, right? DTR is on that pathway. Now, we still have a very long way to go, but at some point he reaches a line where I have to accept, okay, now he's actually quite good. I don't know if I'm there yet, but I'm at least aware of the possibility that I might have to confront that reality sometime in the future.
Some people jumped on that bandwagon during last season
of course,
at UCLA,
right,
where it had already started to show up, right? Hey, he's better than he was 17
And obviously
years ago.
A bunch of people jumped on it after, 25 snaps in a Hall of Fame game. Well, look, he's amazing. Now, come on. It's the Hall of Fame game. Let's not go crazy here. But
I'm in.
I am at least acknowledging that I might have to revisit that at some point.
This season, DraftKings has launched the largest best ball tournament in DraftKings history. Right now, you can enter into DraftKings best ball tournament for a shot at over $10 million in guaranteed cash prizes. Make your entry into the draft today. Sit back, relax, and enjoy the NFL season without having to worry about managing your roster, waiver wires, and more. To start playing best ball, download the DraftKings app using code PFF. Enter DraftKings Best Ball Millionaire Contest and snake draft your team for the season. Each week, you'll automatically rack up points from all your top scorers. No ads, no drops, no trades, no I should have played him insteads. Teams with the most points by the end of the season will have a shot to take home the $1 million top prize. So what are you waiting for? Head to the DraftKings app right now, sign up with code PFF, and start playing best ball today. Join the DraftKings $10 million best ball tournament only on DraftKings with code PFF. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Age and eligibility restrictions apply. Void where prohibited. See DraftKings.com DraftKings.com for details. That's all.
You got it once. Never to be repeated.
It's very good. A couple shows ago, if we could just drop that in right here.
What you should do is you should have it, get that clipped out, and then you can have that attached to our hotkey button thing that we're going to create, and then you could just hit it when you need it.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah?
Can we hotkey the ad reads?
That's what I'm saying. Well, maybe not the ad read, but the terms and conditions.
Terms and conditions, yeah. For sure. We should be able to do that. Okay. Okay, so you know how a lot of times in the NFL, a thing happens? And then yeah. The people overreact, and like the thing that's only happened, you know, that's a rare thing, is now, you know, this is the trend, this is the norm, this is the new thing that we should be getting ready for.
Okay,
is there some element, remember the old Bill Parcells, right? This was this offseason, right? Like Brock Purdy became a thing. Who's the next Brock Purdy? Who's the next whoever? Are we seeing a trend, or is this just a blip of the college quarterbacks with a lot of experience? Because the way you described DTR, I was having the same feels about Kenny Pickett, where Kenny Pickett was a four-year starter at Pitt, and his first 3 years, he was just meh. He was a pretty good ACC starter. Can make some throws, gonna miss some throws. Sorry, he can win a few games with him over at Pittsburgh, and then he broke out his senior year and had a very good season. Brock Purdy, four-year starter at Iowa State. Now, the trajectory was different because he started out great as a true freshman, but you're more like, he doesn't really have the tools for the NFL. And then when he regressed, it's like, that makes sense. Brock Purdy regressed because he doesn't have these NFL tools. How could he win with that type of arm and no size and all that? And then DTR goes, you know, straight upward trajectory like you're saying. And Jalen Hurts has elements of that too, right? He was started as a freshman at Alabama, plays a few years at Bama, gets benched, and eventually goes to Oklahoma and has a good year as well. Does experience matter, again, in a world where there's far more quarterbacks coming out as juniors, guys like Sam Darnold and whoever, right? Like, there's a lot of juniors coming out who don't have that experience, and that doesn't mean they're not good. A lot of juniors are very good. But is there these hidden advantages, again, where these four-year starter types who don't look amazing can actually step in and look pretty good, like we've seen with Kenny Pickett, Brock Purdy, and now maybe DTR, and throw Jalen Hurts in there? Am I missing someone? Who else has done that recently?
I mean, I think it was probably always something that is valuable. So like Bill Parcells, you're right, was always a big exponent of like never touch a guy with fewer than, I forget what his number was.
It was like 35.
Yeah.
I mean, it was like three seasons worth of starting.
It was significant. But he was like,
it made sense at that time when players always stayed for 4 years.
But I think it probably still makes some sense because there's value to that. And actually, the value in that might be going up because what's really important right now in today's NFL is you get no development time. You need to be good immediately, right? And you need to be playing immediately because there's no capacity to develop from the sideline because you don't even get the practice reps anymore. We don't have any time. We don't have any reps to go around. If you're not the starter, you're not getting better. So in order for you to get better, it needs to be on the field, which means one of two things needs to happen. Either you need to make the NFL fully formed, so you're ready to rock right away, or you need to have some kind of skill set that enables you to play in the NFL and get better at the same time. So this is where Anthony Richardson is an interesting case, right? And, you know, other quarterbacks in the past few years are similar, but Richardson in particular, because he doesn't have an awful lot of starting experience at all. So you'd be looking at him, and a lot of people did say this pre-draft, that guy needs to sit and learn for a year or two. But he won't, because he was drafted number 4 overall. He's going to start. He's probably going to start from day one. So that plan is gone. You need to figure out a way of him learning during that first year or the first 2 years before he can be good, right? And he does. He has that rushing skill, so we can build an entire offense that is contingent on his athleticism so that he has 2 years to get better as a thrower. Jalen Hurts was similar. Even though he had a lot more experience in college, but we built an offense so that he could be on the field and get better for 2 years before he became really, really good. But if you're a guy who's getting drafted in the mid rounds, that's not happening. We're not building an offense around you. You're either good or you're not. So forget it. So if you're that guy, staying in college for 2 years and getting better for 2 years rather than hitting the NFL as a prospect that's raw and needs development time, you're way better off, I think, having those 2 years of playing experience than you are 2 years being in the NFL sitting on a sideline doing nothing, like just hope mental reps. Mental reps are worthless as a quarterback at this point. Like, that's not helping. So I do think there's something to guys like DTR staying in college for the full run and if not more, like the extra year, because that playing time is something you can't get at the NFL. There's no development pathway if you're not already one of the, a starting caliber quarterback. So if you think a guy has that capacity, that's, I think, a good pathway.
I wonder if we'll see more 4-year starters coming out, the guys that are not going in the first round for sure. They stay in college. I always mention NIL as a more enticing reason to stay in college, not because you're going to make as much money as you would in the NFL, but there's something to, hey, if you're a third round pick, you're not going to come out early as a quarterback unless you know you're going in the first round. So we might see some more 4-year starters here. My final, do you have any other Hall of Fame takeaways? The only other thing I wanted to mention was Cedric Tillman looked pretty good.
Yeah, Cedric Tillman looked pretty good.
The Tennessee people are coming back for you.
Yes.
University of Tennessee people,
right?
Not Titans people.
I kind of get the feeling that most of the people that will reply and be like, I told you so with the Tennessee people didn't actually listen to what we were saying about that offense, right? Because nowhere along the line did either of us at any point, I think, indicate that the trio of offensive players from that Tennessee offense, University of Tennessee offense, Hendon Hooker at quarterback, Cedric Tillman at one wide receiver position, and Jalin Hyatt at the other wide receiver position. At no point did any of us suggest that those guys would not be good NFL players. The point was simply that that offense is so divorced from any NFL offense that projecting it or projecting players from it to the NFL is largely an abstract concept. You can't look at it and say, that guy's going to be a stud, because they're doing almost nothing that they're going to have to do at the next level. And this isn't just us, right? There's videos out there. I think it was the Cowboys wide receiver coach was basically telling Jalin Hyatt pre-draft that, like, you know who you are. You're a vertical threat. Like, you're not a route runner. And he was having to answer questions pre-draft of like, yeah, I know how to run routes. Like, yeah. And the reason he was answering that is because he basically ran 3 or 4 routes in college and nothing else, which is fine. That's all the offense needed him to do. But in the NFL, he's going to have to do more than that. And if he can, that's great. And nobody ever said he couldn't. The point was simply, we don't know because you're not being asked to do that. And my other point would be, it's preseason week one. Let's hold off on the victory laps, We still don't know if they could do anything.
Yeah, I mean, the Corey Coleman came out of that same offense years ago, and he goes number 7 overall, right?
Yeah, there's quite coming a lot of receivers. The track record of receivers coming out of that kind of offense, certainly recently, is not good.
First off, Cedric Tillman has experience in multiple offenses. Remember when we were breaking it down, Tillman had about 370 snaps against press coverage, and whereas Jalin Hyatt had 15.
Yeah, and his role was a lot closer to an NFL role than Hyatt's was.
The problem, Andrew Cooper in the chat here, the problem is not that they're running option routes. Of course, that's an NFL type of thing. Those are oversimplified option routes because the offense spreads you so wide and uses college spacing. You're almost always facing man coverage if you're facing, so that's the whole, like, are we going to hitch or are we going to run a go? That's an option route in name, but it's like, Harry, my 8-year-old can probably read that.
Yeah, it's also not.
Sorry, I'm not trying to diminish this. All I'm saying is, they see a lot of man coverage. So it's a lot of, if it's man, get going. And the quarterback's just like, I got 4 one-on-one matchups, 4 verts, and let's chuck it up.
But that's the thing. It's also, it's an option route where we're able to, by alignment, isolate you one-on-one against an off-cover slot defender who's a safety in name, but not really. So now Hyatt is looking at this and going, okay, my option is either a hitch or a go against a safety playing 12 yards off in the slot in man coverage. Like, I think I've got that one. Let's run deep. And then all Hendon Hooker's got to do is go, you're going to cover Jalin Hyatt with a safety from 12 yards off, man on one side of the field, on the open side? I think I can read that. So they're just dropping back and it's pitch and catch, right? The number of plays where you look and it's absolutely like routine, easy stuff. It's just not, it isn't comparable. And it won't be. Like Hyatt is going to have to do more things at the NFL, which again.
Do you know what it actually is?
Nobody said he couldn't. We just don't know.
If you're a Vols fan, like my buddy Mike watching over here, we're complimenting your coaches.
It's a great offense for college.
We're complimenting your coaches. Like, good job creating a very good offense that's going to have them competitive again in the SEC East this year with Joe Milton. Wait till you see Joe Milton throw the ball, Sam.
But there's – so do you remember what was that guy's name? Kyaris Garrett from – was it Tulsa?
Tulsa, yeah.
Kyaris Garrett was another receiver from that kind of offense who absolutely cooked in college. And I remember at one point – you know we have those target maps, the little dots everywhere that you can see – when you pulled up his target map, the shapes actually formed like a four-route tree. Goes, hitches, bubble screens.
And a slant.
Yeah. It's like you can actually see that he's only running four routes from this target map. Like, that's what we're talking about. And any NFL offense, you're going to need to run more than that, and it's going to be need to be more sophisticated. So, you know, yes, the upshot of this is Cedric Tillman did look very good. But let's tap the brakes on victory laps with the Tennessee guys. And even if they all turn out, that doesn't make us wrong because the whole point was it's simply an unknown rather than a negative.
Only here on the PFF NFL podcast could you get a quick-hitting Hall of Fame recap like that lasted 30 minutes.
Yeah, that features a defense of the Tennessee Volunteers offense.
What we were really trying to buy time for, though, is these big-name signings from this weekend.
Okay.
Things like Miles Jack.
Miles Jack.
To the Eagles. I can't,
Two of them. They got Miles Jack and Zach Cunningham. Two linebacker signings.
I love both of them. Fascinating linebacker room there. We'll talk about that in a second. Justin Houston goes to the Carolina Panthers. And N'Keal Harry, former first-rounder, goes to the Minnesota Vikings. Let's talk Eagles and their linebacker room and your – I don't know how many times you've used this Miles Jack take, but go ahead. You mentioned it off air. Bring it to the show.
I'm not bringing any take. I don't know that this means a whole lot. Like everyone sort of, this is the kind of, they're two relatively big name signings. So I think a lot of people are going to be like, oh, they don't have any faith in N'Kobe Dean or whatever. Like, oh, this signals a change or blah, blah, blah. This is just the Eagles doing what the Eagles do, which is in August, adding a couple of veteran depth players to a team just to make sure that things don't spiral out of control. Like remember last year when they double dipped and signed a couple of defensive tackles, Linval Joseph and Ndamukong Suh. It's like, did that mean that they had no faith in Jordan Davis was getting hurt or whatever?
Those are different. Don't misconstrue that. They did sign those guys because Jordan Davis was hurt and then playing hurt and ineffective, and they needed a little security there at defensive tackle.
Yeah, but it's just contingency. Like, they reached a point pretty quickly where everybody was back healthy and they just had these two guys taking up some snaps. Like, Linval Joseph, you know, last year in his 900 pounds or whatever he weighed. I'd love to have gotten an official number on that, by the way, because he was making Jordan Davis look small.
We need to talk to the Eagles
anyway,
briefly here.
My point being, it's insurance, it's depth, it's contingency. I don't know that it's an awful lot more than that.
Yeah, I mean, N'Kobe Dean is one player. They also have Nicholas Morrow on the team, you know, slated for some kind of snaps.
Mm-hmm.
The idea of bringing Miles Jack and Zach Cunningham in, not a bad idea. But again, the names are big. Zach Cunningham's a big name to me. It might not be a big name to the average NFL fan. I've always been a huge fan of Zach Cunningham's game. But you pretty much knew what you were getting with Zach Cunningham. Before he got hurt last year, he had 220 snaps last year with the Titans. He was one of the better run defenders in the NFL for the first 5 years of his career. I loved watching him at Vanderbilt. He carried it to the NFL. Really, really good at shedding blocks and just making plays in the run game. The problem with him is he was like the prototype for a long, rangy looking coverage linebacker, but never played like that. 6'3", 230, not a burner, but fast enough.
I never.
Zone length and all that, but just graded under 50 for under 53 in just his last 3 years.
Bad in coverage. I never checked the late Dr. Eager's linebacker stuff that, you know, measures with tracking data how much these guys bite on play action, essentially. But it feels like Cunningham would be, like, right at the top of that. You know, that guy's going to bite a lot on play action. and consequently never be anywhere near the ball when it actually arrives.
Which a lot of times, you know, is probably why he graded so well against the run.
Right.
He had a great feel in the run game. So there is still this world for the Eagles where I think Cunningham becomes an early down specialist.
Sure.
Where that's, you know, you get him off the field in nickel and dime packages. Who knows how often they're going to play base anyway. But there could be something there. Miles Jack, another, you know, fascinating career because he was an incredible – another guy that, like, incredible athlete. He looked like the new age type of linebacker who played running back in college at UCLA. Awesome athlete, could fly around and starts his career. And so he came out of UCLA with a great coverage grade.
Mm-hmm.
The first couple of years that we did grading. He starts in the NFL with an excellent coverage grade, and it's just slowly fallen downhill since about 2019. Just had some ups and downs in his last few grades. 2019 was a 45. Back up to 69 in 2020, 37 in 2021, and a 53 PFF grade last year with the Steelers.
Yeah, his career has just generally kind of fallen off a bit. And last season with the Steelers, you know, people thought maybe that was a potential great fit for him, or like a bounce back spot, and he ends up getting benched late in the year for them, and they obviously don't bring him back. So it just hasn't kind of worked out for Miles Jack. He has, theoretically, you know, all the skill set. He's got the speed, he's got the athleticism, he's got the size, and he's got, at some points in his NFL career, like tape of all this stuff working. It's not like Zach Cunningham, where he's been really good versus the run, really bad versus the pass, and it's like, at some point, teams just tire of that. Like, Miles Jack has been good at everything at some point, just usually not tied together in one consistent block over the course of the season.
So to me, it looks like the Eagles are saying, could we get a run game specialist in Zach Cunningham? Could we get a coverage specialist in Miles Jack, even if that hasn't been his specialty? But maybe if you isolate those guys. This is coming off a year where they're losing the great T.J. Edwards.
The great.
Right? And the guy that I love that was there last year.
Nicholas Morrow? No. Who?
Former Charger.
Kazir White.
I was about to say, whose name escapes me, who I love. I love Kazir White. So they did a great job, first off, developing T.J. Edwards, bringing in Kazir White for a year. So now they're stitching it together at linebacker around N'Kobe Dean, who does, you know, there are some question marks there. So they're just adding some depth.
Mm-hmm.
It's solid, but I don't think it's, I mean, this isn't the difference between the NFC East, between them and the Cowboys, I don't think.
No.
But it's nice to bring those veterans in.
Plus, you get, you know, running back depth.
There it is. Where does Miles Jack rank
on the depth chart?
Eagles running back depth chart. You must be torn here because you've got all of your favorite running backs through
Eagles
history.
Yeah, signing all of them. In this world of like, the way running back is being devalued, it should be pushing players into different positions. Unfortunately, Miles Jack, his two options were both devalued positions. Like, do you play running back, which is getting devalued, or off the ball linebacker, which is getting devalued? Choose. He chose linebacker. I maintained at the time I thought Miles Jack was a better running back than he was a linebacker, but I don't know that would have helped him in the NFL given the way that position has gone.
Fat Cat asks in the chat, do you think Philly uses Nolan Smith as a linebacker?
So they have been with N'Kobe Dean has missed some time, injured or whatever, in camp, and they've been working Nolan Smith as an off-the-ball linebacker during the time where N'Kobe Dean hasn't been out there. And this is part of, by the way, these signings, like, there's a degree to which you need bodies in the positions just during camp. Like, sometimes you'll see this guy's been down a couple of weeks, or, you know, a couple other players are missing, so we just sign a body. You know, N'Keal Harry. This happens, right? We simply need a guy taking the reps so that this whole offense functions during these weeks of practice. And then as soon as that stops, you no longer have a purpose here. Bye bye.
This is pretty common for the sub 240 pound edge rusher, though. To linebacker.
But I don't know if that is an indication that, like, that's the plan, as opposed to we simply need a dude occupying that spot during these reps.
Yeah. I mean, I personally would cross-train Nolan Smith, not because I don't love him as an edge defender, but I think, again, as the Eagles, you're kind of afforded the luxury of so much depth that, hey, year one, Nolan Smith, when you get on the field, you're probably a designated pass rusher, and that's what you're doing. But I do like the idea of maybe cross-training a little bit at the linebacker spot and creating some versatility that I'm always looking for on the defensive side of the ball that maybe not every team taps into. But, yeah, I think that's a smart move to at least play into that a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Walt, for the first time in a while, actually asked a good question here. He asked if we've covered Marcus Peters to his Raiders as a signing.
No, we haven't.
We could throw that into the mix here as well.
Okay.
Marcus Peters to the Raiders.
Uh-huh.
They needed to do something.
I mean, any signing to the Raiders is helping them, probably.
I like all those signings.
It's a pretty low ebb for the Raiders to, you know, work from.
I like all those signings. You know, Jason Verrett every single year.
Jason.
Casey Hayward on the cheap every single year. I like all those.
Yeah.
And they were, you know.
I also, by the way,
the Raiders
anything,
really need help in the secondary generally anyway.
Anything that lets the Raiders keep Hobbs inside is a good thing.
Yeah, for sure.
Like, if Hobbs is stuck playing outside in this defense, which itself does not necessarily play to his strengths, that's problematic.
Although that might keep Amik Robertson off the field. But, yeah, I mean, Marcus Peters coming in, you know, pick off Patrick Mahomes a couple times or something. I mean, that's – no, really, what Peters is that boomer bust type of corner late in his career. But if you get the boom year, just like you got a boom year from Duke Shelley, not the Raiders, but the Vikings did, and now you're bringing in Duke Shelley, you're just, you know, praying for some boom years on the secondary there for the Raiders. Mm. So Marcus Peters could bring that. So
and I like – Ja'Korian Bennett has been getting a lot of rave reviews in training camp. He flashed quite a lot when you're watching Maryland tape. Like, I think he actually has the ability to be a pretty impressive player. I think he's got inside-outside flexibility, but wouldn't shock me if he ended up being a find for them lower down the draft.
Thanks, Walt. Appreciate you jumping in with a good question there, though. Justin Houston.
Way, way too far gone for you to walk back the wall. You can't, like, bring him around now.
What do you mean?
You've identified and clearly targeted Walt as a personal enemy. You can't.
I have not.
Get him back on side.
Just because I refuse to hire Walt as a scout.
I believe.
Even at entry level.
Mocked the concept of hiring him as a scout.
Yeah, there's a difference between hiring the guy and accepting a question from him.
And dumped on his questions. I'm just saying, you've written him off. You can't walk that back now.
Oh, you think Walt's going to leave?
I don't think whether he leaves or not is entirely up to Walt. I'm simply saying that you are probably
Don's,
on his
Don's
list.
Don's inviting Walt to Thanksgiving. I love that our listeners and viewers are going to start having Thanksgiving dinner together.
You are probably on his list of enemies is all I'm saying.
Perhaps. Maybe that's why he shows up every single show.
Mm-hmm.
We appreciate the dedication, Walt. All right, you got anything else on the Eagles signings here?
No.
Good. I got no more use for this guy.
Yeah.
Justin Houston of the Panthers.
Like that one. That's a good signing. I mean, the Panthers definitely had space for that extra edge rusher. You know, Brian Burns. On one side, legit, you know, edge threat. The other side, not so much. And I actually saw there were a couple of Panthers beat reporters that were like, this is a team crying out for a veteran edge rusher on the other side. Why haven't they made a move yet? And then, boom, there it is, Justin Houston.
Who could still kind of play. I remember writing up edge rusher free agent rankings 4 or 5 years ago and was writing up, you know, end of his career. And he's still pretty good. Still pretty good pass rusher. He's going to be more of a specialist. But I love this. I mean, throw Houston in the – you know, into that mix of guys that I would probably sign every single year until him and Melvin Ingram would be on my team every single year.
I mean, he's basically the same age as Von Miller. It's just that he had like a bad year relatively late, you know, in his run, like a lot sooner, and therefore sort of started this like the end stage cycle of the veteran edge rusher where your team looks to move on and then you become this sort of sequence of short-term rental type guys. Miller didn't have that for, I think, a longer stretch of time, and then just went and signed a new big deal. Like, you know, when he came back, he was as dominant as ever. Justin Houston started to wobble and then became, you know, just his career there deviated from Von Miller's and went in a different direction. But the guy's basically the same age, and at his very, very best was right up there with Von Miller. I think we probably, as a league, wrote off Justin Houston before it was time. So these years where he's essentially like a mercenary for hire as an edge rusher, are still valuable.
Yeah, he's been eased into simpler roles later in his career. So last year with the Ravens, he was just a pass rush specialist, 306 pass rushes, only played against the run 93 times. He missed a few games in there, but 430 total snaps for him. 2021, 590 snaps, similar, pass rush specialist for the Ravens. Did the same thing with the Colts, pass rush specialist in 2020, under 700 snaps. I think that's what you're getting, right? You probably don't want him playing that 1,000 snaps.
Right.
So I think Houston has settled into that world that I do like. When we write up free agent rankings every year, we're like, what do you do with this 30-something-year-old, still productive guy? Where do you put him in free agent rankings? Because he's going to be a one-year guy, but he could still play. And every time I say sign the one-year guy, I say do it for 500 to 700 snaps and get the most out of him. That's what we've seen with Justin Houston. And his pass rush grades over the last couple of years have been good, 77 and 75. Still productive. And you turn Gross Matos opposite Brian Burns in Carolina, has not gotten the job done. I think Houston's going to be seeing a lot of time rushing the passer as long as he stays healthy.
Yeah, I think that's a really good signing. Like, that's one that makes an immediate impact for this team, hasn't cost the earth, and doesn't have to be a long-term commitment.
So now Walt's predicting Carolina wins the NFC South. What are your thoughts there?
The NFC South is wide open. Anybody could win it.
Say anybody, and I'd say, yeah.
Right. Like,
I could see it.
The Saints catapulted themselves to the front of that queue as the favorite of the NFC South by getting good, capable, solid quarterback play in Derek Carr. There's absolutely no reason that Bryce Young can't hit that level right out of the box. Like, be that level immediately. And if he is, then you look at the two rosters. Like,
which level?
A Derek Carr level.
You think Bryce Young can step right in and be, say, QB 12 to 14 in the NFL?
I'm saying there's no reason he can't be.
Okay.
Like, Bryce Young has that kind of ability. All the concern with Bryce Young is, well, what if he gets hurt? Okay, but what if he doesn't? Like, even if he gets hurt in year three, what if the first 2 years are simply injury-free and you get Bryce Young?
That's not the only concern.
It was the principal concern.
The other concern is that his height's going to limit his potential, his upside, throwing over the middle, things that have hindered the other short quarterbacks recently, like Kyler Murray and Baker Mayfield.
But what if he simply plays the way he's played in the SEC in the NFL?
Yeah, I'm saying he could still be good. I don't think maybe your only concern was injury. I don't know if the league's only concern was injury.
Okay, anyway, my point being, if you simply get Bryce Young in the NFL, you are getting a guy who can absolutely give you play that rivals Derek Carr, at which point you go to the rosters and say, well, who's got a better roster, Carolina or New Orleans? It's pretty close.
If you haven't heard already, it's Smooth Sack Summer. When you're playing in the summer sun, make sure you're scaped from pubes to bum. Mm-hmm. That's scaped, like as in manscaped.
As opposed to what?
I'm just saying. It's manscaped.
What was the potential confusion there?
I like the way they did that. That's cool.
Okay.
That's right. This is the summer to keep your balls cool while still looking hot with Manscaped. The leaders in below-the-waist grooming are making sure that we all have a ball this summer by giving our pants partners everything they need to stay fresh. Dive headfirst into Smooth Sack Summer by going to manscaped.com for 20% off plus free shipping with our code PFF. The Manscaped Performance Package 4.0 has everything you need to prepare for that summer bod. They've built the ultimate grooming bundle for your summer grooming. Lawnmower 4.0 trimmer that features a cutting-edge ceramic blade to reduce grooming accidents thanks to their advanced skin-safe technology. The Lawnmower 4.0 also has a 7,000 RPM motor, a new multifunction on-off switch, and it gives you the ability to turn the 4,000K LED spotlight on and off when needed for a more precise shave. Did I mention this trimmer is also waterproof? Beach, lake, or shower, this razor will devour even the strongest pubes. Manscaped even threw in two free gifts to their Performance Package 4.0. It's the Manscaped Boxers and the Shed Travel Bag. Get 20% off plus free shipping with the code PFF at manscaped.com. That's 20% off plus free shipping with the code PFF at manscaped.com. It's Smooth Sack Summer, boys. Get on board or get left behind.
I used the beard trimmer this weekend.
Did you?
It was getting a bit out of control. I had to take the whole thing.
Looks great.
Take the whole thing down. They also have, now they haven't sent us one of these, but this is more for you. Like the beard trimmer for you, not so useful because you're in this whole designer stubble late stage of aging that you're rocking right now.
I shaved yesterday. That'll take me through the week.
Here's the thing. So they have what they refer to as the handyman, which is a like electric face razor. So that's for you. I need the beard trimmer because with the beard.
All right. What is it?
The handyman.
The handyman. I need the handyman over here.
Compact face shaver.
Can we get our Manscaped friends to send the handyman over? I could I could pivot to that and tell you all about my once a week Sunday shaves and the precision that they allow me. Yeah. That I'm just assuming is the case because Manscaped makes amazing products.
Although it is what they refer to as a compact face shaver. And it sits quite small in the hand of what I assume is a normal-handed person, which therefore would make it comically small in your hand.
Can we get a plus size?
And for that reason alone, I think you need one, because we should get that photograph of you holding this minuscule face shaver in your giant monster hands. That would be hilarious to me. We should make that happen.
Can we get Manscaped on the phone here, please? All right.
What's our code for 20% off?
PFF.
There you go.
Is the code. Manscaped.com. The other big signing this weekend, N'Keal Harry to the Vikings.
Yeah. Well, this is like I was saying
N'Keal
before,
Harry and
right?
Jalen, they're just...
They have four first-round wide receivers on the roster now, only two of which might actually make it out of training camp.
The former failed first-round receivers, though, you got Jalen Reagor and N'Keal Harry.
You don't see that happen too often at receiver. A lot of teams tend to do it on the defensive line. Let's stockpile former first-rounders. You don't tend to see that many guys like, let's resuscitate the whole – let's get a wide receiver core entirely composed out of first-rounders. Didn't Atlanta do that recently where they had a whole bunch of those guys?
Receivers?
Yeah. Well, they like brought in Laquon Treadwell and that kind of thing.
I mean, Jacksonville, I think, had Laquon Treadwell and Tavon Austin in the same squad.
Right.
Maybe.
But anyway, my point from before, sometimes you just need a dude to occupy a space on the roster for a while in training camp so that somebody's getting reps and you can run 11 personnel. That's what's happening here. Like, they've had a few people injured. Several wide receivers have not been able to take reps, so you're down three bodies. So you bring in a N'Keal Harry to occupy those reps.
I still think there's a world where I would play him as a big slot, fringe tight end.
Fringe tight end.
Yeah.
We're simply – I agree with you in principle that there is a role for N'Keal Harry at the NFL level. But there comes a point where sufficiently large numbers of teams have tried to find it and haven't, that you have to be kind of like,
I just don't know if they have. I think they're
happening now.
I think mostly what's happened is, you know, they've said former first round receiver, he's a receiver. I mean, even when the Patriots drafted him, it coincided at the time when Rob Gronkowski had retired for a year and they had the worst tight end room in the NFL. And it was like, well, N'Keal Harry's probably not going to win on the outside. Make him a big slot and run your tight end, run your Gronk routes with N'Keal Harry. At least try it. And they didn't. The one other thing that N'Keal Harry's good at is creating after the catch. When they, you know, on end arounds and screens and this and that. I mean, who knows? We're year five into his career now if he's lost a little bit of that. But if I'm taking any kind of chance on N'Keal Harry, I'm making him this half big slot tight end hybrid, and I might throw him some gimmick plays because he's got a pretty good feel with the ball in his hands. But those are the opportunities. He's got under 70 career catches in 4 years.
And the
Patriots 2018 first round pick, Sony Michel, has just retired. And N'Keal Harry, the 2019 first round pick, is on his third team.
Third now. There's been questionable picks there. I'm still endlessly fascinated that N'Keal Harry was the receiver that tempted the Patriots back into the first round. By the way, also, again, the team that's terrible at drafting wide receivers, like, there have been some reasonably negative reports about Tyquan Thornton in training camp, like, not emerging as the consistent deep threat, the guy that's going to take the next step year two, blah, blah, blah. Like, how are they this bad at finding wide receivers? But here's the thing. So why can N'Keal Harry have the same career transition as Juwan Johnson?
Yeah, Juwan Johnson, former Oregon receiver, turned productive tight end for the Saints.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I would have done this 4 years ago.
Yeah, but they haven't.
Yeah, I don't know why.
Yeah.
Because you,
when
was Juwan Johnson drafted? Was he even drafted? I don't remember, but...
When? He was in the...
On my award winning...
Undrafted free agent in 2020. Fans.
Yeah, so those are the guys you play around with. Ah, undrafted guy?
Right.
Like when I showed up to Brewers camp in 2006, undrafted, 6'10", project, if I threw a bullpen, you know, you're like, practice session, Sam, I'd throw it with like four different coaches. and they're all trying to like put their stamp on me. You know, they were like, oh, this guy, you're going to throw, you should drop your arm slot over here. Yeah. And then another guy's like, you should throw a slider. So throw a slider. Another guy's like, you got to drop down over here. Now another guy's like, you got to crossfire it like this. So they all had their own takes because like, who cares what I do? Like, you've got no chance.
It's just a ball of clay.
But if I figure something out and nudge you in the right direction, I get credit for it, right? The first round pick throw in the bullpen, like, there's a plan from on high what to do with that guy. So N'Keal Harry, you can't just, like, throw him at tight end. Juwan Johnson's, like, you know, undrafted free agent former receiver who's pretty big. It's like, of course we're going to try him at tight end. He can't win outside as a receiver. You didn't want to be a day one of camp and be like, uh-oh, N'Keal Harry, our first-round pick, he can't win outside a receiver. Hopefully we could teach him over the next few years.
If only there was a way of knowing that beforehand.
So me and Juwan Johnson, like, same guy, pretty
just
much.
Just like the same guy,
is what we're saying. Yeah, N'Keal, yeah, you should try those things. Anybody who's pushing 230.
And they are. So they're almost identical dimensions.
Put his hand in the dirt and give it a shot.
They're both 6'4". N'Keal Harry is listed at 225. Juwan Johnson was listed at 230, I think. They're basically the same guy from a physical size standpoint. Oney, you're right. I think a big part of that is one of them was undrafted. The other one was a first-round pick. So it probably does limit how willing you are to screw around with that kind of thing.
There's another question from the chat. Anything else on N'Keal Harry here?
No, other than I don't think that that means anything, and there's a pretty good chance he doesn't make it out of training camp.
Yeah, probably. But we'll spend some time talking about it. The Raiders signed Yannick Ngakoue as well.
Yes, they did. The Raiders?
Did I say Raiders?
You did.
I meant Bears.
Yeah.
Like, my brain was saying Bears, but I kept – Raiders was also on my mind,
right,
too.
I was just registering that you were bringing
it's
up
the Bears.
Ngakoue signing.
Ngakoue to the Bears.
Before I registered.
I could have sworn I said Bears, but
– you said the wrong team.
Yeah.
Yeah, so the Bears, they've now met the spending floor, by the way. So they no longer have to just sign people simply to spend money. But – you know, Ngakoue does represent probably the only viable NFL pass rusher on that team.
I would have rather Justin Houston.
Yeah.
So that's what's interesting. Ngakoue is heading into year 8, and we've seen a little bit of decline in his production. He has never been a good run defender.
Right.
This is also very, very interesting. As I described the Justin Houston career arc, where it was like teams learned at his age, a little bit older, let's keep him fresh. Let's make him a specialist. Yannick Ngakoue still gets trotted out there 250, 300 times a year against the run where he's never graded above. He's never even graded in the 60s.
He doesn't try.
He's graded in the 40s. And this goes back to Maryland. He's always been this guy.
Yeah. I don't know how much of Zach Cunningham's, you know, one-dimensional style of run defense at the expense of everything else is intentional, and how much of that is that's just the way he plays the game. But Ngakoue is the classic example of a pass rusher that sells out for the pass rush all the time. Like, he's just not interested in defending the run. Now, at some point, you sort of wonder, is that instruction, or is that like an NFL team saying, for the love of God, would you think about the run once in a while, and then, you know, then go to the pass rush, as opposed to every snap bombing upfield and hoping it's not a run play. But yeah, he is a classic one-dimensional pass rushing guy who hasn't actually been that productive as a pass rusher for a while now, but still at least represents that kind of juice on the edge, which this team didn't have otherwise.
So I would say I'm not a huge Ngakoue guy. You know, he's apparently he had 12 sacks last year. Nine and a half NFL sacks last year. We had him with 12. On 434 rushes, though. I mean, again, it's not – doesn't have a high win rate. His win rate was terrible. Lowest of his career since his – lower than even his rookie season where he started a little bit slow. He had a couple 10-sack seasons in there. I'm not a huge Ngakoue guy. But if you use him as just a pass rusher, the other thing is he's a wide nine type of rusher. He is a wide rusher.
Right.
He's not the type of guy you ever want – certainly not early downs, head up over a tight end. You don't want him. He's not a guy that moves around and, you know, kicks in against the guard. He is a pure edge. So if you use him as a pure edge and a pass rusher, he shouldn't play against the run more than 100 times, just like Justin Houston does. I think there's probably some production to get out of him there in Chicago.
So an interesting comp for him last year would be Josh Uche. Both guys had 12 sacks in the regular season, or sacked the quarterback 12 times in the regular season. Let's put it that way.
By our numbers.
Yes. So For anyone that is unfamiliar or hasn't listened for long enough, we have different sack numbers to the NFL because we believe that a half sack should count the same as a full sack. Essentially, the NFL does not award half sacks because they think it's half as good as a full one, right? You needed help, therefore you only get half credit. They award half sacks because they want the numbers to add up on a play. So it's not a qualitative distinction between how good your rush was. It's simply saying that two guys did it at the same time, so we're going to half the credit so that the numbers make sense at the end of the game. So at PFF, you get credit for a full sack even if somebody else arrived at the same time. And by the way, most of those sacks are of that variety. They're not of you actually needed the second guy rocking up to make this play stick.
Yeah, right? we try to make it like... Same time
right.
tackle, basically.
So essentially, we'll give you 12 sacks if you sack the quarterback 12 times. The NFL could give you any number based simply on how many times you split that with another guy. So Josh Uche and Yannick Ngakoue both sacked the quarterback 12 times last season. Yannick Ngakoue's pass rushing grade was 57. Josh Uche's was 88. Josh Uche had, 12 more total pressures over that period of time and did it on 150 fewer pass rushing snaps. He also only played 47 snaps against the run in the season. So the Patriots were very good at isolating him as you are a pass rushing situational specialist only. You will never play the run if we can possibly help it. And then another guy I think that was interesting to kind of contrast that is Uchenna Nwosu for the Seahawks. Played 900 snaps, played against the run almost 400 snaps, was not like a situational guy at all, had 10 sacks, sacked the quarterback 10 times. But unlike Ngakoue, who only had 44 pressures, Nwosu had 61 on basically the same number of pass rushing snaps. So was significantly more productive as a pass rusher on a per snap basis, even if the sacks ended up broadly similar and actually Ngakoue had more.
Yeah, so I'll say this. The Bears, the defensive line is going to be fascinating this year. They've brought in a lot of depth, some youth. You got guys like DeMarcus Walker was their biggest free agent signing. You bring in Ngakoue.
He's useful as well, by the way.
What's that?
Walker's useful.
Oh, yeah, he is useful. But it's going to be, can the Gervin Dexters and Zach Pickens of the world, right. Two draft picks, can they develop? Dominique Robinson, who showed flashes early last year and, kind of tapered off. There's not a lot of historic production there in Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
But, we'll see how these guys develop there.
Yep.
All right. We gotta tell everybody about the send in their fantasy football punishments.
On you go.
Just send them in. I don't have all the details.
And by all the details, you mean any details at all whatsoever.
No, I was just
got nothing.
I was telling you. There it is, right there.
Yeah.
Send in your fantasy punishments.
Uh huh.
Like the best videos. You should do a you do like a some sort of slide. The slide in always still plays here.
They didn't have the slide in the Hall of Fame game. It was just straight to Chris being there.
Preseason for everyone. They probably forgot.
Well, with Fred, Fred retired.
Maybe Fred was the real architect of the slide in.
The brains. We told you he was the brains behind the operation.
They need an homage,
right,
to that. So you and a friend can become VIP guests of Chris Collinsworth, our boss. At a Sunday night football game of your choosing. I mean, dude, send something in. You can go to the Sunday night football game.
Yeah.
Like, you're going to the game.
I just
if
have
you
VIP.
Send something in.
I mean, okay, Al's not there anymore, so there's probably not a steak kicking around for you to have, but.
And the best part is you get PFF Plus for your life. Lifetime subscription to PFF Plus, so you'll never have to do this embarrassing video again.
Sure.
So here's the trick here. Even if you didn't lose, do some sort of fun, embarrassing video. Pretend like you lost.
Right.
And then you get to go to a free game and you get a free PFF Plus subscription for life. That seems pretty easy.
Yep. You can see the page there on the screen. The link for that is in the description of the show. So if you're listening or if you're watching on YouTube, go to the link in the description. Send in your video. You could win free PFF Plus for life and be a VIP guest of Chris at a Sunday night football game this year. Of your choosing, by the way. So you can pick the best game. And Sunday Night Football has some good games.
Wherever you want.
So go do it. Go do it now.
All right. Anything else people want us to discuss before I answer some GM questions?
No, and I'm looking forward to that more now than I was a minute ago because it turns out there's some technical issues that are going to lead to some funny things.
This is going to be great. So are you answering some questions today too?
No, just you. We're working. Okay. So, we've been focusing a lot on video elements for the podcast, you know, graphical elements, display, you know, stats, all this kind of stuff, right? We haven't spent that much time focusing on the audio listening experience. You may notice if you consistently hear squealing or buzzing in these microphones that we just can't ever eradicate from the studio.
I haven't heard people complain about buzzing in a while.
Same, but you know, I'm sure it probably still exists on the basis that it seems to be blighting our existence for all time. But anyway, what we are going to try and do is work on a couple of little, you know, audio transitions, little montages. So when you do your Palazzolo for GM consultant segment, there'll be like, in addition to the Kevin Costner Palazzolo on screen.
Walkout music?
Yeah, there'll be like a walkout music. And
is
I also
my old walkout music? Ultimate Warriors theme?
No. And then also, if we have a billionaire segment, you know, Ask the Billionaire.
Ask the Billionaire.
We're going to have like a little, definitely a hotkey for that one, because I found the most billionaire thing ever to play.
So don't forget, it's Ask the GM, right? Palazzolo.
Consultant GM, Steve Palazzolo, NFLpodcast@pff.com. If you want to ask Steve Palazzolo a question as in his role as consultant GM, fire in the questions, put, you know, consultant GM or whatever in the
hypothetical question. It could be for your actual team, whatever it might be.
Right.
And then you can also ask the billionaire,
yes,
which is you.
So also, you know, in this whole make-believe dynamic, I am the figurative NFL team-owning billionaire who is in need of a consultant GM. I'm the one posing the questions. So if you want to ask the billionaire how they would react to certain situations, familiar and intimate as I am with the mind of a billionaire, then fire away. Same thing. Fire NFLpodcast@pff.com. All right. You want to get your ass over to the podium?
I'm going to the podium.
Cool. Here we go. Destiny provides the opportunity.
Music play?
Character fulfills it. No, we haven't done that yet. We're working on that. But it turns out it's quite difficult to like scour through every piece of film in the last 20 years, finding things that are applicable to say in a little montage, you know? So that's going to take some work. There we are.
I'm 40. I need somewhere to put my hands.
You can't. Look, the podium is the podium. Deal with it. Oh, look.
I've got my salad.
Turns out the macho man's glasses and hat actually react to the background as well.
Oh, do they?
These are the perils of green screen. Now, the real peril of green screen is that I've worn an Ireland jersey, which probably means that if the camera goes back to me, yeah, there you go.
What happens?
I am wearing the backdrop, effectively.
Oh, that's awesome.
That's great. I have become Rob Lowe, except instead of a hat, it's my entire jersey.
You should wear that jersey every single show, and we could just make it into any shirt we want.
We're going to need a visual graphic of this, because that's some pretty impressive work. Okay, now, you know, stay over there. Don't leave the podium. That's still disrespectful. Good. It's not allowed. Now.
Yeah.
I have a question for Palazzolo GM. This one is from Bryn. Steve, first time GM over here. That's Bryn.
Okay.
I sold my billionaire owner on a vision and my plan to bring a Super Bowl to insert team name here. The roster I took over was in rough shape, but not completely devoid of talent. And we've added a lot of players thanks to trading down several times in the draft.
Smart.
We're in the midst of camp with around 40 rookies on the roster. My question for your consultant services is, how much should camp be swaying my roster decisions or even preseason games? We had extensive evaluations on all these players, but that was college, and this is as close to NFL football as they've come yet. Help me weigh prior evaluations against current, potentially meaningless evidence.
Man, I love this question. This is a great question. It's a challenging one. I say hashtag trust the model. You got to trust the college evaluations. Now, it's not like you're throwing out your training camp evaluations. There's definitely something to the eye test here, right? Training camp does matter. And honestly, I suggest a lot of those joint practices, right? You really want to get those game reps, those controlled game reps as much as possible. And they do matter. Preseason games and training camp reps, I think you got to add them all up, right? So what happens with preseason games a lot of times, the guy plays 30 snaps. You make a couple plays here and there, and he looks like he has a good game. The training camp reps, though, you can stack those. You can get a bigger sample size. So I'd actually weigh training camp. As long as you've got those game reps in training camp, you know, that's a little contradictory, but game-like reps in training camp, I would weigh those maybe even a little bit higher than the game action in preseason. Don't get too swayed, but you go in with your priors, you know? Look, this happened to me at spring training. Happened a lot of times, right? You roll into spring training and you knew the team had everybody slotted. These guys are going to the big leagues. These guys are going to AAA, AA, etc. There's always a couple guys, though, that kind of moved a little bit. So have 90% of your priors are probably going to be true. But, you know, allow a little bit of room for that 10%. And I would say lean on the training camp reps. As long as you guys are going high intensity and getting a good look at those guys, you might be able to, you know, get a little better evaluation than what you had in college. But the reason why you lean on those college evaluations is they're tested against time. And if you're using the right model, it'll work over time, despite what happens at rookie training camp and in the preseason.
There we go. Nice work. It's a beautiful shirt. It really is. Apparently, the constant references to the model are wearing thin on certain people in the chat. They roll their eyes when you mention the model.
Why are they rolling their eyes?
I don't know. Maybe they...
I assume you have kind of some kind of draft model, Brian. Someone's model. It doesn't have to be mine. Mm. Someone... You trust your draft evaluations. Walt, trust whatever the heck you use, right? Just trust your evaluations to a point. Don't be swayed by a month of work. You tweak a little bit in that month. That's all it is. Trust your work.
All right. Thank you very much, Consultant GM.
Yep. Thanks, all. See you next week.
I think that answers Brent's question. Solid work. Solid work. Yeah, note to self, if we're doing Consultant GM, don't wear an Island jersey. Apparently that causes problems.
See what this looks like.
I tweeted it out. You can see the image. All right.
Well, that's no. You should always wear that jersey.
Yeah.
Let me see. Where are you?
There was our consultant GM. So anyway, NFLpodcast@pff.com. If you have questions either for Palazzolo consultant GM or for the billionaire owner, and as soon as we get that little machine in here to do the hotkeys,
you need to wear this every time we do the green screen. That's unbelievable. Yeah.
As soon as we
Tyler get... could put any shirt on you at any time.
Yeah.
That's beautiful.
Uh-huh.
Oh, man, that's great.
I have a few Island jerseys as well. We could easily work this.
Isn't that a fascinating concept? I love that question.
Green screens?
The
question.
The how much do you actually weigh this first look?
I thought you were just fascinated by the technology at work. Green screens. You
know, no, that too.
Isn't this amazing?
How much should your, you know, 30 to 40 days of real hands-on working with these rookies and getting a feel for them and, you know, pushing them, and how much should that weigh against your evaluations?
Yeah.
I mean, here's the other thing.
Particularly for guys that are showing something different, I think, because that's the problem. It's like, if what you saw in college is the same thing as you're seeing in camp, the same thing as you're seeing in preseason, it's easy, right? But the guys that are showing you something dramatically different from what you thought a month ago, that I think is a real issue. Because you're like, well, how much is this real and how much of this is whatever? Like a product of environment, just a freaky run of play, whatever it is, a product of limited reps. Who knows?
I think camp, though, and maybe as I'm thinking about it more, I think camp can tell you who's ready now, though. I mean, just because you loved a guy and drafted him in April, it doesn't mean you're wrong if he's not ready right now. So it's okay to say, hey, this guy, you know, needs another year. We hope we expect to see more from him next year, but he's not going to contribute that much this year. I do think camp is going to move your depth chart around a little bit, but it doesn't necessarily mean you've missed on a guy or anything. So it doesn't necessarily mean that.
It must be, I think, getting harder as well for teams that do have, you know, the situation in the question. Like, if you've got 40 rookies, that's a lot of reps to be
around. the best guys. We're going to watch the Rams. I mean, Sean McVay has even said it's going to be different this year. Sean McVay, who, as soon as he took over in 2017, took the most extreme preseason stance and did not play his starters at all in the preseason. Even year two Jared Goff, who was coming off of one of the worst quarterback seasons in NFL history, in a new system, and McVay's like, nope, doesn't need a game rep. We're rolling into the season. And we had no idea what to expect because we hadn't seen Jared Goff in a preseason game whatsoever, right? He didn't even take a snap. Is that right?
I don't think so.
Am I misremembering that?
No.
So McVay took this extreme stance, no starters whatsoever. And now he doesn't have starters. He's got two good players, and they're going to have to play all these rookies, so it's going to be actually a competitive preseason for the Rams, and I think they're going to just throw all the rookies into the mix and, you know, see who becomes the 4, 5, 6 starters that they need.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. You don't want to talk?
No, I think I agree.
Oh, okay.
The end.
It's going to be fun. Yeah. Show's over. Show's over. You're cashed out.
Just to that part, I was finished with that theme, that topic.
We could turn your NFL shirt into a real shirt to sell.
Yeah?
Yeah. I'm sure they won't care. Us using the Shield.
Absolutely. They're famously very relaxed about that kind of thing.
Shield shirt, right. We'll call it.
Uh-huh.
Do you have anything else to discuss today?
Did you see this NBC? It is NBC, right? They've essentially created...
Oh, I have a question for you.
They're in the search for the best non-quarterback of the millennium. So since the turn of the millennium, 2000. Who is the best non-quarterback in NFL history over that period of time? And they've created like a bracket. Now, it started apparently with our good friend of the show, Chris Sims. Also...
He's one of the best non-quarterbacks?
No. Like, he started creating this list.
Oh.
Because he's both a quarterback and not one of the best. But they also have then folded in, you know, if you want to make something worse, what do? You ask the people. The people
people are voting on it?
Yeah. So.
Oh, is the bracket filled out?
So they've got to the bracket now, which is the final bracket. 16.
I don't know, just tell it to me. Surprise me as we go.
All right. Final 16. So I don't. They've essentially tried to do it. I don't know quite what the stipulations were, right? But mistakes have been made before we even get to the bracket, right? For example.
Just the players they picked?
Yes. For example, I don't think there's an offensive lineman on the list. So Joe Thomas, one of the greatest players to ever play the game, has not appeared on the list of one of the best.
I was going to say, off the top of my head,
yeah.
I forgot about J.J. Watt for a minute. Off the top of my head, I was going to say Aaron Donald, Darrell Revis, Joe Thomas.
Yeah.
But yeah, J.J. Watt needs
which
to be
are
on
there.
Right. I think
okay,
those
so
guys should be in the final.
The current bracket, right? Travis Kelce against LaDainian Tomlinson, J.J. Watt versus Derrick Henry, Darrell Revis versus Gronk, Chad Johnson versus Ray Lewis, Larry Fitz versus Aaron Donald, Julio Jones versus Luke Kuechly, Brian Dawkins versus Michael Strahan, Adrian Peterson versus Calvin Johnson.
So I would, no offense to Chad,
yeah.
But I would replace Chad with either Antonio Brown or DeAndre Hopkins.
Right. So I think what they did is have one per team, right? So Ray Lewis went up against Ed Reed, for example, and two of the best players in the last millennium or over this millennium.
Yeah.
Only one of whom could even make the bracket, right?
Gronk and Kelce both have strong arguments here.
They also allegedly ignored some of the votes because apparently Polamalu in the vote beat Ray Lewis.
Oh, really?
So there was some kind of one per team and then division or whatever. I don't know. It's very so anyway, mistakes have been made before you even get to this level. You know? There's a lot of very good players that simply haven't even made it to the bracket, such as Joe Thomas, any other offensive lineman, Ed Reed, Polamalu, like a lot of guys. Von Miller, I mean, you know, we're missing a lot of players here.
I would say Aaron Donald should win. There's also an AFC versus NFC bracket here, yeah.
Correct. I think Aaron Donald wins. I do think that the bracket here, though, throws up some interesting battles. Adrian Peterson versus Calvin Johnson is a pretty good round one matchup.
Yeah, running back bias out of it, Adrian Peterson was special.
Right. I also think people are overlooking Derrick Henry. I think Derrick Henry versus Watt is pretty special. Like, both guys effectively redefined what we thought was possible at that position. It's
I
just
think
that Watts was more obvious.
Revis and Gronk in the first round is a travesty. But it's because it's the AFC East, right? You're trying to do this divisional thing. That
right.
is a travesty, though, because both guys, I think, should be in the Final Four.
That's rough.
If I was picking a Final Four out of this group, give me Revis, Gronk, Watt, and Donald.
Ooh. See, my Final Four had, I think, J.J. Watt versus Ray Lewis, and then Donald versus Peterson.
J.J. Watt, Ray Lewis, yeah.
See, I think Lewis beats Revis for longevity. Now, I'm not consistent because I think Watt wins, even though longevity was a problem. But, Darrell Revis is as good as any cornerback we've ever seen in the NFL, but didn't do it for as long as Ray Lewis did, who was also one of the best linebackers we've ever seen. So I think you have to give Lewis the edge there. But, realistically, the difference between Kelce and Gronk is longevity, right? Like, Kelce just is still going.
Did they just not think that the fans could handle voting for an offensive lineman?
I don't know. I don't know how the offensive lineman never made it this far. But it sort of makes you understand sometimes how offensive linemen still think that they get screwed and all this sort of stuff. Oh, why don't we ever get any recognition? And you're like, come on, you do, really. And then this happens. You're like, no, they really don't. People don't even think offensive linemen exist.
You know, back in the day, it was kind of acceptable. Yeah, but PFF has existed for 15-plus years here. Like, you can have offensive line takes, you know? You can at least, you can use some data to back things up.
So Donald wins, right?
I have I have a question for you. Yeah, I think Donald should win. I have a question for you.
Okay.
And I saw our friend Bob Sturm was trying to answer it on Twitter. Messi playing in MLS.
Yes.
Is like what? Is this Tom Brady playing in the MAC? What is the equivalent here? Messi playing in MLS.
Yeah.
Because every night he's got a highlight. He's awesome. He's the man. What are we watching here?
Yeah, it would be current 46-year-old Tom Brady playing in the FCS championship.
FCS?
Probably.
So Tom Brady's going head-to-head with North Dakota State right now, just carving him up.
So Tom Brady, park him on whatever crappy FCS team doesn't normally make a run, and then he goes on the run and meets North Dakota State in the FCS championship. That's what's happening.
Great. Why would Messi do that? Just all the money?
A lot of money. Yeah. A lot of money. The contract is such, and it's multiple contracts. So MLS has a salary cap, right? But A, you can designate individual players that just don't count. So it would be like
Messi that guy?
Yeah. Okay. So it would be like if the NFL decided, right, you have a $153 million salary cap, and then you can just say, we're going to pay Patrick Mahomes $3 billion, and it doesn't count, right? That's what's part of it.
Yeah.
Other thing is, every contract in the MLS is not for an individual team. It's like centrally contracted, so they can effectively do whatever the hell they want, right? In addition to not counting on the salary cap. So they're paying him whatever they're paying him, which is going to be the earth. And he can have like a piece of the team, so they can give him like, you get 25% of Inter Miami or whatever it is. And he's going to get a slice of the Apple TV subscriptions. So like every new person that signs up to watch, he's going to get a piece of. And he's going to get a chunk of the Adidas merchandise, which apparently has been such a high demand that they literally cannot print enough Messi jerseys for people to get them. So he's going to end up earning like $1 billion+ out of this.
Well, worth it to go play the FCS.
Yeah.
You know?
Whilst becoming like the top scorer just for giggles, because he can.
I'm fascinated that in a sport like soccer that you could be that much better than everybody. Because like the more people you have on the field, the harder it is to have that much of an impact. Quarterback's unique because you literally get to, you know, touch the ball on every single play. But usually like an NBA player is more valuable than, you know, a hockey center or a baseball player because there's fewer players. So in soccer, where there's so many people, can you be that much better? I mean, golf's kind of the same thing to me. I'm just fascinated that like a Tiger Woods could have been that much better than everybody when you're facing the field every week. Like, how do you win as often as you did? It's just really interesting to me that you could be that good.
I mean, there's a couple of things. Number one, he's just that good. Like, we are talking about maybe the best player to ever play the game.
Yeah.
I say maybe. A lot of people would say definitively, but, you know, comparing Messi to Maradona to Pelé, it's just, you know, whatever. Arguably the best player ever. So you are talking about like the pinnacle. And he's shown that he can do it against the top level competition. Like the dude just almost single-handedly won a World Cup by deciding he was going to do it this time around. But also, I think you start to see pretty quickly, you always hear that cliche, you know, there are levels to this game. There's quite a large number of levels between, you know, let's say Barcelona at the peak, the top of the Champions League, and the MLS. So Messi dropping down to the MLS is dropping down several levels. And anyone that's ever played against soccer and then played against a team that is, let's say, multiple levels above them, or even a player that's multiple levels above them, you find out very quickly, like, this guy on a world level, this guy stinks, but he's at least three levels ahead of me. And this is embarrassing. Like, that's what you're seeing here.
Okay, real quick. What level would you have to go to have a similar level of productivity as Messi?
There isn't a level bad enough for that to happen.
No, I'm saying, like, is it like a 12-year-old girls' league?
That's what I'm saying. The level doesn't exist that I could have that kind of impact.
You couldn't go dominate scouts team.
I mean, I could dominate, but it wouldn't look the same as Messi. You know what I mean? Like, you ever see those?
I'm just talking production.
The Japanese are big on this. You ever see those videos where they put like three players against a horde of 100 kids? You know?
Yeah.
That's what, you know, anybody can do that, but it's not quite the same.
I just want to see you against like the 8-year-old team or something like that. Go, you know, goal a game. That's all you need, right?
Yeah.
You could do that. Easily.
Yeah. I just, it feels like it's.
There's probably like a 12-year-old team somewhere where you could go and have Messi-like numbers.
Yeah. Oh, numbers, sure. I'm just saying that you'd feel the difference, you know? The performance wouldn't look as slick.
I'm not talking style points here. I'm not asking you to be the Patrick Mahomes of 12-year-old soccer.
You just want the production.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How far down do you have to go to have similar results?
Yeah.
Where maybe, you know, people buy an Apple TV for you.
It's definitely an age grade thing, yeah.
Yeah. All right, it's time to go. We're going to be back on Wednesday. Is there anything else?
Yeah, Wednesday. And then after the show, we'll be going to Bengals camp. Right?
Going to Bengals camp. You send in your Bengals camp questions. How's Joe Burrow's calf? I don't know. We'll ask around.
We're probably unlikely to find out.
I don't think we'll find out whatsoever. Yeah, we're going to go check out not Bengals camp, but Bengals Packers practice.
Do you see Ja'Marr Chase saying that, like, don't even show up before week five to Joe Burrow?
Oh, he was saying that?
Yeah. He was basically like, I don't want to see you before week five. I don't even care if you're ready for week one. Don't show up again.
Yeah.
And he was saying, apparently he was.
Long game.
He said that he did that last year. Like, he deliberately sat out an extra game just to make sure, like 100% sure that he was going to be good. Don't rush it back.
I'm not saying the one extra game, the 17-game schedule is the thing, but it's the 17-game schedule plus the one less bye in the playoffs. It makes it more of a grind where health might be more important in the NFL than ever before.
I mean, I think there's definitely value, merit to the argument of if you're even remotely on the borderline for a guy like Joe Burrow, you know, for a team that's expecting to be challenging for a Super Bowl, sit out the extra game. We don't need you week one. We need you week 20. That's the point.
So we'll go check it out. We'll see.
Somebody, I forget who it was, but somebody emailed us in pointing out that your vitriol against the Justin Herbert records in the 17-game schedule era was stupid because he didn't start his first game. So he only essentially took advantage of the 17-game thing like last year at the end.
I thought he did start his first game. Oh, that was week two. Yeah, Tyrod got one start. And
uh-huh. So he's even after 2 years relative to 16-game people because he missed a game somewhere in there as well. So he's essentially only took –
It was that plus –
He only became the 17-game schedule beneficiary after 3 years.
It's that plus the era.
Plus the era. You were just railing against the 17-game thing. You're like, you see, I told you this was going to happen. This era of 17 games, everyone's going to become the first guy.
Take away 300 passing yards. It's going to be significant. Take away 300 from that number. He probably falls to fourth.
No, he was still that guy after those first periods. Like the first year, he was still that guy.
Yeah, what are we going to go?
Record.
Thanks to everybody for tuning in. We'll see you on Wednesday for more PFF NFL Podcast.